Blog Talk Radio.
Welcome to another session of Paranexus Radio. This is Michael Jones, and joining me is Grant Rumidunst.
Hey, everybody. Welcome. We're so fortunate to have Mike with us tonight.
Hey, what's going on, guy? I see Doug decided to take a little bit of vacation, and so we're going to kind of fly by the seat of our pants a little bit tonight and talk about abductions.
I don't know if that's what actually happened, Mike. You know, I think he was playing with that Ouija board again, and he opened a portal. You know, let's hope he's back by next Thursday night, you know.
Well,
we warned him, you know, and he just wouldn't listen.
Well,
and I think that's not really him in the chat room, but, you know, who knows.
Oh, that's probably just a duplicate then. Okay, we'll be right.
That's the real unplugged Doug. That's what I want to know.
Yeah, no doubt. I do want to go ahead and tell one of our members that he did a great job finding and doing the research on the UFO footage I posted on our website. There was a UFO video that came out on the internet back on July 3rd in Arizona. It was Lake Havasu, I believe is how you pronounce it. And it actually was pretty interesting video footage. The only problem that it really had was it was acting like a balloon. Well, you know, calls it as you see it. Our own Brian Parsons sit there and tracked it down, and sure as the world, it was actually a UFO balloon that was holding a Budweiser banner underneath it and had broken away. And other than that, man, the video itself was really kind of awesome to watch. I mean, you know, it actually lets you have a little bit of idea of, you know, the different angles that you can see a UFO at and things like that. It was a good demonstration of, you know, on perception. And it was kind of compelling a little bit outside of the fact that it was bouncing around like a balloon in the airstream.
Well, you know what, Mike? The thing that I think is really interesting about those balloons is in the news not too long ago, and I think that the videos may still be on YouTube, is about flying humanoids.
Oh, yeah.
And in reality, you know, it was a video that was, that at first, it was really kind of intriguing because of the way that the balloon kind of undulated, and after a while it realized it had been tied up, and so it was just like manipulated from a distance. It looked like something that was constantly changing its shape.
Yeah, and morphing.
Which is very interesting.
Right. And I've noticed a lot of videos coming out of Mexico seem to be around the city squares in the afternoon when they release all the balloons from the vendors.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. So, you know, I think a lot of this stuff's just being misidentified, which, you know, that does not by any means suggest that all the video coming out of Mexico is not real. I have seen some pretty compelling stuff. It's just got through being released not too long ago, and I'm still looking into it before I make any comments, but it's pretty sharp. You know, it's supposed to be up close and personal. One side of me is leaning towards a model. You know, the other side of me is going, you know, that's pretty convincing. But
well, you know, it's really interesting stuff. Mike and I, for the benefit of the audience, Mike and I and Doug have kicked around, you know, that we're just waiting for the UFO photo you know, that's going to knock our socks off, and it's going to be very difficult to say his fate. But, you know, our greatest concern, and I think probably you folks in the audience share it with us, is whether this stuff is computer-generated graphics. And I'm very skeptical of a lot of things I see out of Mexico. They're just too good to be true.
Oh, yeah, absolutely. You know, that's a matter of fact, I believe not too long ago, the UFO hunters busted an individual using his cell phone and actually manipulating the video to where it actually showed a UFO, you know, floating above his house. Well, it turns out that he added it in. It was computer graphics. And Jaime Maussan was in on it. I mean, all kinds of people were in on it. MUFON got called down. I mean, it was really compelling-looking video until they started really looking at, you know, the raw footage and come to find out somebody had been editing it. So it's just, you know, it's one of those things you can't ever tell until you actually go review the evidence. You know, that's like a very important rule to never forget. Do not assume just because you're seeing it with your eyes that it's real, ever. There's very good hoaxers out there, guys.
Yeah, and you got to be very careful with it. You know, I guess the old rule of thumb applies. If it looks too good to be true, it probably is.
Oh, absolutely. You know, it's kind of like the belief about gummy bears, raining gummy bears and chocolate every day on the planet, right?
Yeah. There you go. Yeah, well, you know, the one that we looked at, we watched one about a week or so ago that I thought was really kind of interesting, and I think it was on YouTube. And basically, it was a craft that was flying, and at one point in time, it turned itself at an angle where the sun was just kind of gleaming off the bottom, and that was an interesting perspective that I had not seen before. So if that was a fake, that was an interesting how they did there. I would be interested to determine how they did that part, because that was very clever.
Were you the one that was telling me about Stanton Friedman making the comment that a lot of these UFO sightings aren't necessarily just momentary? Some of them are like 40 minutes long.
Yeah, when I was a young guy and going to school in community college, Stanton Friedman came to the small campus in Michigan, and he did a lecture, and that was the first time I met him, and I was just astonished, because I was under the impression then that, you know, you saw UFOs for just like the blink of an eye and they were gone. And I asked him a question, and I said, well, you know, how long do people see them? And I was just floored when he told me, oh, some people have seen them for like 35 minutes, 40 minutes. Because I always thought it was a very fleeting phenomenon, and therefore, you know, it was really cool, but it was very questionable.
Yeah, you know, that would also lead to suggest that these people that are seeing these little glimpses are misidentifying them. You know,
could very well be.
Go ahead.
I was to say, hard to tell. You know, I mean, some of it's a matter of perception, but I mean, you know, sometimes look at the way that our normal aircraft, if they're flying out at a distance and the sun hits the aluminum, high-polished aluminum fuselage, you know, it can look something different. It looks like something different than its true configuration. And I think people who aren't aware of that are likely to misidentify stuff.
Right. Well, like for me, for instance, a lot of people don't know my background. I work with aircraft on a daily basis. And I see them in all kinds of weather conditions, landing, taking off, every possible way, you know, that you could possibly see an aircraft. The neatest thing to watch is when they come in during really foggy nights, and what it looks like is some scene out of Close Encounters. It's phenomenal. All you see is the spotlight breaking through the fog and this blinking light in the center, and that's all you see of it. So what it ends up looking like is like 50% of the footage I've seen on the internet. These people are claiming it's a UFO, which in fact, in my opinion, is either commercial or business jet that they're filming from a distance through haze or fog.
Well, that occurred quite a few times when they were out at Area 51 at the height, you know, before the government came out to Area 51 and said, listen, we're taking up all this space where all you people have been up here taking camera pictures. it's all forbidden now. But they got people out there that were videotaping flights that, as we all know, or I'm sure most of us are familiar with, at Area 51, supposedly, they fly in on commercial airlines, fly in and bus in on, well, the company's airlines, actually,
yeah,
or the government's airline, all these folks out there. And people out on the perimeter that were watching misconstrued the aircraft, the normal 727s or 37s or whatever going in there, as UFOs.
That's absolutely right. And it's amazing, you know, how many people are willing to believe and just make the jump, you know, just literally a leap of faith. They don't even look at what they're actually seeing. They don't think about it being aircraft. They don't think about it being a military complex. You know, of course you're going to have flights coming in and out of there, and you're going to see stuff more than likely you've never seen in your entire life, you know, mm-hmm. that are just the oddest shaped aircraft. Even back in the 40s and 50s, I've actually seen some pretty wild looking photos of things that were saucer shaped, but were still, you know, aircraft that flew normal, just like, you know, standard aircraft. They just didn't have any wings. You know, they were disc shaped. And
yeah, so was their chat room comment is the UFO Janet flights full of aliens. I like that. Those alien technicians are flying in from Las Vegas. Lord knows there's probably plenty of them out there. No offense to folks from Las Vegas.
Absolutely. I mean, well, now, you know, let's go back the other direction. I myself, you know, in my past history, have seen a lot of things. And the most recent one I've seen was here locally. And I think, I don't know if it was them trying to remind me they're still around or what's going on with it, or was I just there, you know, by chance and saw it. It was within 500 feet, okay? Did I have a camera? No, of course not. You know, shame on me. I'm an investigator. Why didn't I have the camera on me? But the fact of the matter is I did see it. I've actually recreated a simulation of what I saw. It was a hexagonal light pattern with a center light. And it was sitting there hovering. And I actually stopped the car, rolled the window down. I listened. I was like, okay, that's got to be a hot air balloon with a humongous basket rig on it or something, you know, to where they can spotlight the ground and see the ground really well, right? No, it wasn't a balloon. It wasn't anything like that. It actually had understructure. I mean, you could actually see, I mean, the mechanisms, you know, underneath the UFO itself. And what was amazing was it was just hanging there. It didn't even look like it was on a string. It looked like somebody had put it on a shelf, and it was just sitting there. And there's no way. You know, I work around aircraft, man. They weigh a good amount of, you know, tonnage. You know, you're talking 10 to 20-ton aircraft. They just don't hang in the air, and that's how big this thing was.
I guess the critical thing was it making any noise, Mike?
No, that's the point. It wasn't making any noise, but it was emitting light.
Yeah, that's pretty wild.
You know, chrome light, and that's just it was just another, you know, a whole other incident in my life. And, you know, I keep with me to remember, you know, that the stuff's still around. I haven't been able to get rid of it, but, you know, it was – actually, one of the few times I can actually say that I wasn't scared. I was actually enjoying what I was seeing and taking it in. It was kind of cool. It was a nice change.
So Mike, you know, you've been experiencing this alien abduction since you were a child.
Yeah.
And at this stage of the game, now that you it seems like you have been working really hard at it. You have your website up. You're doing a lot of work. You're collecting a lot of data. How do you think the nature of your experience as an abductee has changed from childhood to now you're an adult, and now you've kind of turned it around and you're investigating it?
Well, I think the one thing I've noticed is the fact that I've actually been able to establish boundaries. And, you know, as a child, you know, you're told what to do, and you really don't have your set of rules that you've established. You're following your parents and whoever, you know, may be in charge. So when this stuff happens, you don't have any set of rules to fall back on, you know, right or wrong, other than what you've been taught. And so you don't really have any boundaries. You know, so when something like this happens, you're in a fear state. You don't have any way to really combat it. You're very unsure of yourself. That's for, you know, that's one thing I noticed through the whole entire thing. frightened out of your mind, as the other one, you know.
Well, I would imagine probably, it was, you couldn't really talk about it, right?
Well, no.
And if I recall right, you had some experiences with your grandmother and other family members where you guys just kind of went like, we all know, kind of, you all nodded that you knew that it happened, but you really didn't talk that much about it, right?
That's right. And that's what's even odder about the whole thing. You know, my grandmother and I knew what had happened. She approached my mom the next day and tried to tell her about it. My mom was pretty much pushed her away, in essence, about the whole topic. You know, she didn't want to talk about it. Crazy people talked about that. And so we from that point on, it just kind of remained like a little hidden secret between me and my grandmother for years and years and years. And then I grew up with the fallacy of believing that it was okay to keep it totally a secret. And I didn't realize at the time that it was actually detrimental in producing post-traumatic stress in the long term. Because what it was, what it is in essence, is when you don't share that kind of emotion that you're experiencing, it just builds up, you know, and you have nowhere to dump it, you know. And there's been times, some of the stuff that happened to me, I couldn't have shared back then because it was so traumatic to my psyche. There was no way to even relate it to anything that anybody would understand, you know, outside of put me in a ward somewhere till I could de-stress. And
Well, it's so far out. I mean, even as a kid, you've got to know, especially if there's an adult present, that this is way, way out of line.
Oh yeah, oh yeah, definitely.
This doesn't correlate to any kind of reality. So that had to be really tough, and especially when you don't talk about it.
Right, that's the thing here. This is not a social norm, and not being a social norm, you have to keep it to yourself. And it's hard on a person, all the way into my teenager years and dealing with that. You know, I went down a pretty bad slippery slope during my teenage years because it finally started catching up with me of what had happened and was still happening. And noticing that girlfriends that I did have wouldn't hang around me at all because they were seeing some of the stuff happening. Individuals that came into my life that hung with me were other abductees, which I find that kind of interesting. It's almost like they knew that I had to have some kind of companionship, so they threw the others at me, in a sense, I think, to keep me sane. That was an interesting time in my life. We had had a lot of things happen during those years.
Well, how did you guys? I mean, it had to be tough. I think, and correct me if I'm wrong, it seems like you guys have a feel for each other sometimes.
Oh, absolutely, absolutely.
And it must be, God, it must be really, it really must be a relief or very cathartic to be able to tell somebody.
Oh yeah, well,
share after all that time and going like, man, this is what's happened, and they go like, yeah, same thing happened to me.
Yeah, exactly, exactly. And so that's the other thing of it is, I've tried really hard to keep level-headed about all this. I've actually got friends that have stuck with me over the years that have absolutely nothing to do with this, but they've been around and seen the back end of something or the beginning of something and were fortunate enough to get away before they were included, I guess, or however you want to look at it.
Mm-hmm.
But, overall, man, if you don't have the outlet to share your experiences, what ends up happening is it's just like a pressure cooker. You know, you've got to have a release. You've got to have a place to dump that emotion, because if you don't, it's going to eat you alive. That's one of the main reasons I set up my website. It wasn't so much that I'm trying to collect a bunch of data, per se. What I'm trying to do is facilitate a safe haven for people to go to share their experiences with each other, to be able to defuse, for a better word, and understand that what's going on is something totally I'm not going to say it's normal by any means, but, you know, it happens. You know, it's just like anything else in life, you know. You want to see something stranger than fiction, just pay attention to what's going on around you. You know, it's amazing, you know, the complexity of the world and all the craziness in it. And this is just one of the things, you know, and so I'm personally involved, and I'm just trying to
you didn't have really much of a choice, and I think most abductees don't have a choice. I mean, I can't remember which one it was in The Matrix, whether it was the red one or the blue pill or whatever, but you guys got the red pill that sent you right to The Matrix.
Oh.
You know, you got it whether you liked it or not.
Oh, it was.
People got it probably in areas they'd rather not even talk about, but the bottom line was that, you know, that was kind of, you know, against the...
I would say, actually, you do have a red and blue pill kind of situation. Not knowing part of it, I've met people that are abductees. I mean, straight up and down, they're abductees. They know they're abductees, but they refuse to talk about it. They shut that part of their life off completely, do not interact on that level or anything. Still happens to them to this day, but they are so... They're I'm not going to say they're totally dysfunctional, but they're almost unemotional.
Well, there's the beauty of your website. You know, we've talked about this before, and you know, you provide a safe haven for folks to come in and talk with other people, where nobody's going to ridicule them, nobody's going to think they're crazy, and they may find out that by coming in and talking to you guys, that what they're experiencing, you guys have experienced something similar.
Oh,
and
yeah.
That goes a long way to help people deal with this, because one thing for sure, if you don't talk about what you feel has occurred, it's going to be it'll come out one way or another. It'll come out with headaches, you have backaches, or something else is going to happen. It'll manifest itself some way.
Absolutely.
And so you really have to deal with it. And you know, it's we're not saying it's therapy or anything like that, but it's good to talk to other people and supportive people. And plus, when folks do that and come to your website, is you well know, Mike, by participating, and of course, if they agree to it, they contribute to the research about this phenomenon.
Well, absolutely. And see, that's the other thing. You know, I've talked to you many times about it. I've talked to Doug. You know, we can get researchers involved all day long on this subject, all day long. But when it comes down to it, at the end of the day, the only true people that understand the aspects of abductions are the abductees themselves, you know, and it's amazing that people aren't using this resource to help each other. You know, that's the thing I'm trying to achieve here, is let everybody interact. Let everybody understand that they're not alone, because that's one thing this really does. This alienates you from being a human being. From the get go.
Goodness, if you're questioning your reality, if aliens are walking through your walls and you see that, that's going to be pretty darn unsettling,
mm-hmm.
because that goes against all the laws of everything we've been taught. That shouldn't be happening. And so, how do you kind of, you know, deal with that with regular reality? With our matrix, if you know that there's something behind the veil like that, kind of tough.
Well,
very tough.
I'll tell you how I'm dealing with this. I personally, myself, having started at a young age, it's almost like you're indoctrinated to the strangeness. To you, it's a sense of normalcy, if that makes any sense. You know,
mm-hmm.
it's kind of like, you know, if you've been around guns all your life since you were
You've been what's called in the psychological field, you've been conditioned.
Exactly. Just like, you know, a Pavlovian response with dogs. You know, you're used to it, so it doesn't shock you. Now, when you go try to talk to people who've never experienced it, then that's when the realization of how strange, how outlandish this stuff is to everybody. And, you know, that in itself is traumatic. You know, you've got friends that you've gained over the years that trust you, and all of a sudden you're talking crazy. You know, you'd be surprised how many people you think are your friends until you start talking about this. And it's not that they don't like you or anything like that. It's just what it is they've got their sense of reality. And the older you get, you're going to really notice this even more. They have an established set of rules for their sense of reality. The moment you bring up anything that's outside that established rule is the moment you've attacked attack everything and their dogma, everything having to do with what they believe, and it just freaks them out. They cannot accept it. Now, the ones that are open-minded, like my buddy Mike, he's stood by my side through all this. He's actually had enough experiences on the side from a distance that he knows that I'm not full of crap on this. You know, he knows that what I'm talking about is the truth. You know, I don't bullshit anybody, and I'm not going to, you know, apologize for saying it that way. I don't. You know, this is how it is. This is how it's laid down. You know, this is what I've experienced. I'm sorry if you don't believe me. If not, you know.
Well, the thing that's so very interesting about this phenomena is, I mean, we're talking about something that actually started, you know, that was really documented. I think some of the first and earliest cases of reported alien abduction occurred in like the 1950s in Brazil, where a farmer was taken on board and claimed to have met a couple of aliens. And for all we know, it could have been going on for a lot longer than that. But, you know, this is something, I guess, if you adhere to the theory that we are being visited or we're being monitored or we're being, you know, somehow followed or we're part of some sort of longitudinal study, I don't know. You really have to see that the whole thing has evolved over that time period since then.
Right.
And
we're just
not party to what it is, and we don't know whether it's necessarily an actual physical thing or perhaps it's a psychological thing, where we're doing some sort of evolution or maybe this sort of opening of the consciousness is part of a shift in the paradigm.
Okay.
Who knows? I mean, it's that's what's so fascinating about it. And it's not something that just started happening.
Right. Well, I'll tell you something that is pretty amazing in itself, and this is historical. There have been many, many stories, and I'm talking thousands of years old, of goblins, elves, pixies, dwarves, all these different beings out of medieval times or way before that, that come in and steal children in the middle of the night and replace them with their doubles. Okay?
The old changeling theory.
The
yeah.
changelings, right. Mm-hmm. And they're not changeling. You know, if I were going to guesstimate what that was about, it's just like what happened to me. All of a sudden your eyes are open to a whole new level of reality. Of course you're going to act different. You know,
so, you know, that's the point, though, too, though, that you bring out and you illustrate so well is the fact that at that time, in those people, in their frame of reference, in their frame of reality, the only way they could conceive of something, an alien being, would be as a fairy, or, for all we know, whatever the phenomena may be, they may be able to manipulate, obviously, how we perceive them.
Well, now,
and we know that with children's abduction sometimes, they appear as big fuzzy teddy bears or lovey-dovey squirrels or owls or things that aren't very frightening.
Right, and this goes all the way back into actually adults do too. I'll tell you something, another fascinating fact is, and this is a cultural anthropological observation, I think. That was nice. Sweater. Anyway.
Very good, Mike.
I'm getting tongue-tied tonight, everybody. You have to forgive me. But anyway, according to your technology level, you're going to perceive reality to whatever is common around you. Well, if you're in medieval times and magic is one of the belief systems, guess what you're going to get? You get fairies, goblins, elves, you know. So what I'm trying to say here is the alien beings that we're experiencing now easily could be the same entities back then that were giving people grief back then, which means, in essence, these entities may not be aliens at all. They just may be being perceived at this moment in time as aliens, because if everybody will sit there and step back for just a few moments and think, in this past 100 years, we have went from men not being able to get to the moon to being on the moon to coming to the realization that all these stars have planets, and then coming to the even bigger realization that, hey, they could have life on them. And so belief system is now encompassing aliens.
Yeah.
In this past
and you know, Dave made a comment in the chat room, and Dave, I just want to tell you, that my two children were replaced by evil clones. I don't know where they came from, what galaxy or what planet, but you know what? You make a good point. He said he's always contested that his children were replaced at some point.
Oh, man. No, that's
little,
just
a little comic relief there.
No, that's just the juvenile abduction. But anyway, anyway, yeah, I mean, it's just, it's really fascinating. You know, I've looked into that aspect of it. I've looked into, okay, what if this is a dimensional thing, you know? Maybe what we're experiencing, because it's so fleeting and it's so transient in nature, is we're getting a dimensional crossovers, you know, of different realities, and that's the reason we see Bigfoot. That's the reason we see UFOs. That's the reason we see ghosts. That's the reason we see aliens. And they interact with us during this little short time period, and then when the two realities get back out of phase, all of a sudden, they've disappeared, and they're not interacting with us anymore, and the evidence isn't there.
Yeah, it sure would be interesting, especially with, like, Bigfoot, if, you know, I mean, and it, but to me, it happens way too often. I mean, the sightings, it seems that way too many people have reported, but it'd be interesting if just like a portal period would open up momentarily, and what you're actually looking into was not actually something that was happening then or now, but something that was happening then. Okay. Maybe you're getting something from, you know, 5 million years ago. For whatever reason, there's a portal that opens. But, you know, the other interesting concept that you and Doug and I have kicked around, too, and it's not something that we've created, I think Jacques Vallée has always talked about, and that's why call this phenomena something extraterrestrial when one way to approach it is maybe it's something that's been here on the Earth and we've co-inhabited with since we came out of the cave. And maybe we're in some sort of symbiotic relationship with some sort of other type of entity that lives here, and, you know, for whatever reason, we've been coexisting. And the way they manifest themselves could be in lights in the sky, or, you know, or the Virgin Mary, or who knows, you know, some of these miraculous appearances. So,
yep. Hey, we got a couple of questions from the chat room from Sharon. One of the first questions, let's see here, is, what experiences are you having now? Well, I just related something to Doug and Grant that happened to me this past week. And this goes back to, I have this theory that these things either feed off of fear or are using it as a form of control. Now, understand, I am dead asleep. I fully realize that this is a dream when this is happening. Okay? I'm sitting there, and all of a sudden, and this is in the dream state, I have the covers ripped from off my body. Okay, this happened this past week, by the way. And anyway, I sit up in bed in the dream and look around. Now, my heart's pounding. I'm fully experiencing, you know, in all its regalia, fear, the whole nine yards, adrenaline rush, but it's in a dream state. At that point, it scared me bad enough that it woke me up, and I'm under my covers. I'm in the exact same position that the dream started in. I sit up and look around the room. Nothing's in my room. I feel like something's in the room. So, you know, I'm thinking, okay, that's hypnagogic state perhaps. But I still make the realization for some reason out of a dead sleep to make the comment, you're done here. You need to move on. Why I said that, I have no idea, other than I have finally come to terms with whatever has been messing with me lately, that they're trying to get a fear response. They're trying to get back in control of my emotions, I guess, in other words, to, you know, create a control situation. A lot of abductees report, you know, the whole...
Well, you know, the thing that's very interesting about it is that, you know, when you put somebody in a situation where they're very anxious and afraid, then you start chemical reactions, actual physiological chemical reactions in the body and the brain. And maybe, you know, when those things happen, we're easily manipulated or put into certain states that we just don't know how to, you know, how to put somebody into yet. So it's really interesting stuff. But, you know...
Well, you know for a fact, Grant, you're a psychologist, during police state actions, they will strong arm people and actually bully people because it's easier to control them that way.
Well, I think interrogators do that. You know, I mean, with the best example of that was Abu Ghraib and a few things where they terrorized and they humiliated and degraded people. And you know, you can get, you know, if you do that, you could, they're usually easy to control. You break down their belief systems. But, you know, just to digress for a second, Sharon asked a really good question. I just want to comment on it a few comments back. And you know, Sharon, the thing about what you said about the slow release of information, that's been around for a while. And it's been speculated that the government is in a campaign to kind of desensitize us for the eventual landing on the White House lawn, although I'm a little bit skeptical about that. But, you know, that has been around for a while, and there's a lot of people that subscribe to it. And, you know, it probably wouldn't hurt us.
Yeah,
and if we are a little bit more compassionate, I mean, but my concern is, gosh, we still can't get along with each other here. I mean, I don't know how we. I guess it would probably be kind of like what's the name of that movie you just saw, Mike?
Oh, District 9.
The aliens, District 9. Yeah.
Yeah,
I don't think it would be much better than that.
It's an alien apartheid. Yeah, it was interesting. Sharon had another question. You know, what kind of strategies I have now for collecting information or data? You know, from the actual event itself. Well, you know, like for instance, that situation, all I can do is keep a log. But now there have been other instances where I have, you know, lost time and things have changed in the house, which I'll go through and photo document. I have put evidence, you know, away in the ice, as it were, for later analysis when I can get the money. And it's just, you know, it's a matter of collecting your evidence, storing it in such a manner so it doesn't degrade. And, you know, it's pretty much just the same way you do forensics at a murder scene. You know, that's all you can do. I am personally, I don't have a lot of money, so I have to make do with what I have, you know. And it'd be nice, it'd be wonderful if I had a way to do DNA testing, you know, because Lord knows if I go through and swab my house down, I'm going to probably find something that don't belong here.
Yeah. Well, you know, Mike, you know, one of the interesting things, I don't know if anybody in our audience have read the book where it was the recent book that Bob Barney and Betty and Barney Hill, and I know I can't read the title, escapes me now, but it was the Hill case revisited, and our friend Stanton Freeman participated in that case. And one of the things, it gave some really intriguing details about what happened to Betty and Barney Hill. And, of course, during their abduction, at one point they removed Betty's dress, and this part I thought was really plausible. It sounded very plausible. The aliens couldn't figure out; they'd never seen a zipper, you know. Maybe they only had Velcro where they came from. But the bottom line was in the effort to get her dress in a position where they could do an examination, they ripped it, and it was a brand new dress.
Oh yeah.
And so when she came home, she put the dress in her closet. And it sat there for like 30 years, and nobody, you know, took a look at it. But when they reopened and they looked at some of these things, because these accounts were told to Betty's niece, they actually did some DNA testing on that. And they found some stuff that was, you know, nothing really conclusive, but it led Stan to speculate that maybe that the residue that was left on her dress was that the aliens that were doing the examination actually had like a bioguard around their entire bodies.
Well, that'd
and
be,
that was the leftover residue,
that's
which I thought
possible.
Was really fascinating stuff. You know?
You know, our own doctors use that same technique, but they use iodine.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
You know, Dave asked a question. Have you ever tried videotaping your sleep patterns? I have... used web cameras and monitored my sleep and everything. But there's one thing I do want to state here, and this is really bad of the media. I wish they would quit doing this. They are so suggestive on the fact that abductees get abducted during sleep and sleep only. That is not the case. I can actually tell you maybe 30%, 40% of the time, maybe, I was asleep. The other times I was wide awake, and sometimes I was actually with people that were there experiencing it too. So, you know, the fact that I'd love to wish that it was a sleep problem, you know, I've checked into that. I really have, and there's I sleep normal as far as I can tell. I sleep sound. You know, I do normal flip-flop routine that everybody else does, you know, every night, same patterns. One thing I want to say about Betty and Barney Hill case that you were bringing up about the dress, if, now this is a good, for instance, if she had a way to keep that on ice all these years, they would have been able to see what kind of biodegradable material that really was. You know, that is something, you know, that I personally myself have been doing. I've been keeping things that I've actually collected over a few months on ice, and I'm just waiting to the time that I can do a little bit of analysis on it. But,
well, you know, Mike, that might be something that folks might find useful, is either videotape, keep a written journal, or,
right,
you know, maybe do it on tape.
Right.
And jot down what you're experiencing, and then, you know, that might help you, you know, work your way through
right.
it, and might also work with some other folks. You may
well,
be sharing similar experiences.
I'll tell you one thing, the keeping a journal, you know, keeping your evidence and all this other stuff will do for you. It'll actually pull you back to reality. You cannot, you know, after you sit there and look at your journal and start reviewing all the stuff that's happened to you over the years, you can't sit there and just think, you know, this is a mental illness, because it's too random when it strikes. And, you know, if I'm not mistaken, mental illness, when it kicks in, it kicks in. It's not just like an on and off thing for, you know, you may have it for one day and then it goes away for a year and comes back, you know, a different day when it chooses. Does that ever happen in psychology? Have you ever noticed that?
What was that again, Mike? I'm sorry.
Well, like, for instance, you'll have, let's say it's schizophrenia.
Mm-hmm.
Just, you know, like, here's a good for instance. Let's say I had an abduction experience, right? And I'm
mm-hmm.
keeping a journal. 2 or 3 months down the road, I have another abduction experience now, and all of a sudden it takes a year before it happens again. Schizophrenia doesn't jump around like this. Schizophrenia, if I'm not mistaken, when it starts, it progressively...
Well, let me put it to you this way, okay? If you are having a full-blown, exacerbated case of acute schizophrenia, you probably couldn't write something that would be that cogent or together on a piece of paper.
Right.
It'd probably be so bizarre, you know, it wouldn't make a bit of sense.
But it's what I'm getting at. It doesn't occur randomly.
It doesn't. No, it doesn't. It, when it happens, it's usually something that, you know, sticks with you for a while.
That's what and that's one of the things.
Yeah, it doesn't come and go.
Yeah, that's what I was going to say. And in a journal, you know, you'll notice that this stuff's random. You'll start seeing patterns on, like, how you're being picked up. You may find funny things out, like, you know, about, like, for instance, there's been times I've come home with clothes I've never seen in my entire life on my body. I've actually, Mary wanted me to relay a story to everybody. There was one night I went out and was driving around. I was going to stop at this convenience store I saw on the side of the road. Now, I'm out on pretty far out in the woods, just taking a drive, and God knows why I was doing it, but I'm out there driving around, and there's this convenience store, and I said, I'll stop and get me a Coca-Cola and then head on out, right? So I go in there, and everybody's kind of quiet. I don't hear anybody talking, right? So I get a Coca-Cola, do what I'm going to do. I leave. And I was sitting there telling somebody about a new convenience store I'd seen out towards the state park. Well, we go back out towards the direction of the state park, and the convenience store isn't there. And then I start sitting there thinking about it, and I'm like going, you know, how much – and it was off the main road. I mean, right there literally off the main state highway was a convenience store, and I know for a fact it was there. But the Coke was not in my car the next day, the little 16-ounce bottle, none of this. You know, nothing that would confirm that I had stopped at the store. So it was one of those situations where, you know, I'm kind of led to believe that I was led out there to that location and picked up, and they did whatever, you know, and then told me to go back home. You know, that kind of stuff happens. You know, people don't realize how much control they, when they decide to come get you, they come get you.
Well, you know, Mike, at this stage of the game, you know, and you and I have kicked this around, so I'm just going to open it up because the audience hasn't had the benefit of some of the things we've kicked around. What do you think the agenda is?
Wow.
What are some of your theories about the agenda? Both good, let's take it from the dark side, and the most optimistic side.
Okay.
Based on all of your gut intuition, and all of your research to this point. What do you think?
Cons and pros? Okay. Con side, what I think might be going on is we're being cultivated. And I don't mean in the sense of biologically cultivated. I mean on a spiritual level, as far as fear and that being actual food source. The interesting thing pattern-wise I've noticed is it's about fear and confusion. The entire experience has nothing to do with anything that lends to any linear logic outside of when you see a device or when you see the alien or things like that. But beyond that, and nothing seems to really have any meaning, you know, and it sure as the world's not good socially for the abductee. So, you know, there's a lot of bad aspects of this. You know, another con that I've thought about is this is a subtle takeover. You know, they talk about the hybrid situation. You know, that's what a la Bud Hopkins and all that stuff. You know, they're subtly introducing, you know, hybrids back into our society. Maybe they're trying to subtly take us over from the inside out. You know, what better way to not have a war? You know, just literally walk in over a number of years. I have a hard time with that one, though. You know, that's these guys.
What
do you
think if they're engaged in some sort of genetic, long-term manipulation of our species?
Let me think. I want to say that I think they do genetic manipulation. I think they do perform that. And the only reason I say that is from the things that's happened to me and some of the weird comments I've gotten out of them. And I mean, it is very fleeting times that I've ever got any response. But the responses I've got is it's for my own good. You know, this is going to make you better, things like that. So the only thing I can figure out that they're actually doing maybe is modifying the genetic structure to keep your immune system in balance so you don't get sick, or maybe vice versa. Maybe they don't get sick and you don't bring something back to them. And or maybe they're putting genetic markers in so it's easier to find you. You know, they always talk about these implants being kind of like tracking devices, and I'm like going, you know, that really doesn't make much sense. These people, they don't seem to have an issue finding you when they need to find you, you know. And as far as the implant stuff, you know,
one of the things that you and I have kicked around, and I like to kind of turn over my head, is one of the guys I always used to like in science fiction was Arthur C. Clarke, you know, and some of his ideas. You know, this is a guy that predicted satellites in the 1940s. Satellite communication, but one of the things that Arthur C. Clarke, he described like dispassionate gardener alien species that basically, you know, came bopping into our solar system doing whatever they felt was required, and you know, basically we were inhabitants and we were like, you know, marigolds out there. If they needed to pluck one or move one over here or there for the betterment of the whole entire species, they would do it. And you know, I'm just kind of wondering here in my mind if perhaps these things that are going on are meant to genetically manipulate the species over a period of time, not necessarily for the worse, but what if it's maybe something for the better?
Right.
You know, I mean, and whatever seems to be going on, we're not going to be party to that agenda, whether it's ill or whether it bears good for humanity. It just seems like the mystery of it. But the other side of that coin is, the disturbing part is people are victims.
Right.
And what gives any species the right to go into somebody's home or den or whatever it is and yank us out? I guess we do it all the time, so I guess maybe it's endemic with the more advanced species. Because, I mean, look, we grab bears out of their dens when they're hibernating.
That's right. Well, I was going to say also, you know, you're looking at it from a human cultural belief system of how we socially interact. Okay?
Right.
If these things are robotic in any nature or pre-programmed or however you want to say it, they could care less about your emotional well-being. They could care less of who you're with, and I've experienced this. They don't care. I've been at work and watched everybody freeze up and been taken. So, you know, this people have to understand here that this is not like what you're seeing in the movies kind of thing. And this, and I'm not going to tell everybody just to go running off scared, because I can't say that. You know, there are pros to this, and it's one of the things I'd like to say real quick. You know, we were talking about the bad aspects of this. One of the pros, and I don't know if it's just one of the human conditions of dealing with a lot of wild things in your life, but it has opened me up awareness-wise and on a different spiritual kind of journey, I guess, to be blunt.
Well, you know, that fits in exactly with what Dr. John Mack came. That was the conclusion he came to, that he thought that whatever was going on, it was a phenomena that was going to impact humanity, and it was going to forever change us, because it changed our view of the universe. And so, you know, what you're saying is really in line with his books. And I would encourage everybody. If what we've talked about tonight interests them, to really read his book, because he found characteristics in Dr. Mack, who unfortunately passed away, was killed in an automobile accident several years ago, was a licensed a psychiatrist who was also an instructor on the medical staff at Harvard University, and when he started researching the abduction phenomena, was literally made an outcast in the academic community at Harvard.
Right. Well, this is one of the things that, I want to relay, pro-wise, yeah, it's opened my eyes up. Yes, I know, we're not alone. I know. You know, there's a big difference between saying I believe, I logically can deduce, and this is like, I know. It's just like, I know my mom gave birth to me, kind of, I know. And, it's amazing that the change in your mentality, the change in your open-mindedness, how you view other people. And but the main thing here, I want to say is the other pro part of this that could be going on is they're preparing us for something a lot bigger. I don't know if anybody's ever heard the term reluctant, but it's almost like to preparing a lot of abductees to be reluctant ambassadors to carry the message back to the population that we're not alone, that we have to wake up, that we have to take full responsibility for our society for a change and step up to the plate. We are responsible for humanity. Why are we ignoring ourselves, this way? And yes, what they're doing is not right by any means, but, I'm kind of wondering if all this is just to get us used to what's out there, but there may be a heck of a lot worse, and this is just a tip of the iceberg.
Well, one never knows, and it's certainly something with, as many planets and everything else out there in the universe, how many different sentient life forms are out there, probably just too numerous to count, and, how many eons they may be ahead of us technologically is something we can just sit around and kick around forever.
Oh yeah.
But I think that what you hit the nail right square on the head, and some of our folks in the chat room have also talked about it too, is that I think as humans we can't possibly fathom the psychology of an alien culture.
No.
In particular, if that alien culture is, something like a hive mentality. I think that, and I'm not talking about the Borg, but, I could see how, maybe termites or something, something similar, or an insectoid might be able to evolve a higher culture.
Oh, absolutely.
Who knows what that could happen in under the right conditions. So.
Yeah. Well, I would invite anybody that is willing to participate. You don't even have to be an abductee to come to my website. You can interact with the others. I haven't been there, of late. I've been extremely busy working on other projects, which, forgive me, everybody that's on the forums, but I am coming back soon. And I invite everybody to come sign up. It's easy registration. It's free. There's plenty of things to read there. There's plenty of people to talk to. We'll be adding things. I'll be adding content very, very soon. Matter of fact, Paranexus also, paranexus.org, is a great site also. We have a lot of information over there. alienabductee.org is my website. And like I said, if you just need a place to come and know for a fact that you don't have to worry about being judged. You know, everybody's got a different story. Everybody's sense of perception of reality is different. And, you know, however you dealt with what happened to you is how you dealt with it. You know, it's learning to accept the fact that what happened happened. And once you can get to that stage, then you can move on, and it's not such a traumatic thing anymore, you know. And know that there's other people, man. That's the main thing. You're not by yourself. And no matter what the media says, you know, not too long ago ABC had a special that had a few people that were supposedly abductees on there. And I noticed one had taken a religious turn. The other one, I think, was a charlatan. And then, of course, you know, there was, I believe, a couple of women on there that, you know, they more than likely, they may be abductees. I'm not too sure. I hadn't had a chance to talk with them or meet with them. But, you know, it's amazing. Everybody's different. Everybody has to operate in their reality and to get by on their daily routines and, you know, have a job and have families. And if you're not healthy and you're not dealing with this, you cannot get back to feeling normal. You can't get back to being.
You know, the important thing is that you're going to have a safe place.
Oh, yeah.
You know, we'd say, you know, if you like the show tonight, folks, it's been a real pleasure talking to you. We hope that between now and sometime next week, we can get a hold of Doug Kelly. You know, he may be trapped forever in the chat room. We don't know. I haven't seen his handle in there. But, you know, Mike, it's been a real absolute pleasure having you with us tonight and hosting the show, at least from my standpoint. Fantastic stuff to kick around. And, you know, next week our guest is going to be Mark Anthony. He was on the show a couple weeks ago, and we would encourage folks to call in. And, you know, Mark gives readings on the air. Real interesting guy, very pleasant. So, you know, and he welcomes your calls. And an interesting guest. So.
He's pretty smack on with everything I've heard him say so far.
Yeah,
you know, when he read me, so I was pretty impressed. But all right,
great show tonight. And you know what, folks, we appreciate everybody in the chat room with their questions. And you know, come to Paranexus, visit us. We're looking for you to come on and sign on as a member. So think of all the wonderful resources we have for you and. Keep you up to date with what's going on in the paranormal community. So, Mike,
it's been
a real pleasure tonight, and
before I forget, let me mention something.
Absolutely,
we've got a database active on paranexus.org. If you go over there to the link that says registry, make a report. Please go over and file a report. You don't have to give names or anything. You know, this is just for the database, and what it's going to do is start showing the hot spots in the United States where stuff's happening. And we'll be able to go out and do investigations and do follow-ups on it. So,
And you know, we're always your feedback's always welcome. If you want to be a guest on a show, you know, send us an email. You know, we're always happy to hear from you guys. And you know, if you have suggestions or even if you want to be a guest on the show, give us a call. You know.
All right, guys. Thanks, everybody. Have a good night.
So yeah, everybody, great talking to you. Great show, Mike. Good night, everybody. We'll see you next week.
Thank you.